Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to an amazing conversation that everybody's going to enjoy today. It's all about right-sizing, not the movie, but actually the issue for businesses around right-sizing information technology infrastructure. My name is Nick. I'm a guest host on the podcast Structured Insights, and very happy to be here today with a fine gentleman, Mr. Bill Tracy. Welcome.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me, Nick.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about today. So we are in the time of year where strategy and discussions around IT are very prevalent around planning and what are you going to do for the next year. And one of the big topics is actually right-sizing your business. And that can come in a lot of different forms, right? So, I mean, from assessing usage, consolidation, virtualization, cloud-first strategy, managed services, all those things. Those are all good topics when you think about right-sizing. But given your role and what you do, What's one of the basic things to think about when you think about right-sizing your IT infrastructure?
Yeah, I think when we're thinking about right-sizing infrastructure in today's world, as we think about hybrid workforce around multi-cloud and hybrid cloud environments and a new age of applications and workloads that our customers are needing to adopt and integrate in their environments, you know, data center infrastructure really comes to mind in today's world. Many organizations are having to deploy new applications and new services with things like AI, big data, and data analytics on-prem again. And while there is a hybrid and a multi-cloud strategy that adopted, a lot of these solutions are requiring you to deploy, you know, on-premise data center compute and storage infrastructure again. And, you know, rethinking how you're deploying that versus some of the legacy three-tier architectures, I think is really important for organizations to do today.
So why would somebody wanting to consider that? I mean, what type of business problem from a practical perspective are they trying to avoid?
Well, one of the big things you're trying to avoid is you know, both, I guess it's kind of the Goldilocks problem. You don't want to overbuy and you don't want to underbuy. Cloud gives us tremendous amounts of scale and usage-based compute and storage, but the nature of some of these workloads that organizations are looking to run may require that to be ran on-prem. And the traditional thought process of having to buy for 3 and 5 year life cycles doesn't necessarily fit the business need today, especially with how rapidly things like AI and data analytics are evolving. So if I can look for ways to simplify my data center infrastructure and reduce my upfront investment and buy what I need to support the applications I need now with a real clear, concise path on how to grow as my needs change, that's what most organizations are looking for to help preserve cash flow and provide that cloud-like experience on premises.
So really, you know, if you break down the issue around is economics, right? So it's economics and efficiencies, right? They're trying to solve that problem so when someone says, hey, you should always have a cloud-first strategy, a cloud-first strategy can be hybrid though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, private cloud is absolutely a consideration in a cloud-first strategy. And it's an often maybe forgotten about or not thought about piece of hybrid cloud. And I also need to think about hybrid cloud portability, my ability to move workloads from on-premise to cloud-based infrastructures and scale out, whether that be for business continuity and disaster recovery purposes or just for workload scale as my needs change and how I deliver that application. And, you know, it's an area where hyperconverged infrastructures like Nutanix are doing a really good job of enabling clients to achieve everything we've been talking about here to deploy or roll out a new application in their environment.
So when you look at, you know, from the technology, you mentioned Nutanix, I mean, from a technology perspective, if somebody is looking at different providers and looking at different technology solutions, why would they? I mean, what does Nutanix have compared to someone else? Like, what's the value there? And I guess maybe frame it in the context of what you guys do, what Structure does, right? As offering managed services, like what should they be thinking about?
Sure. So when you think about those needs change rapidly, every time we see a customer go into a data analytics or big data project, whatever we've thought about, predicted as far as data ingest and power needed to do the output and reporting, it feels like it's always underestimated. Whatever best guess we can take, right? As soon as frontline business leaders and executives start seeing the power of the data and the analytics that come out of that, we want to put more data in because then we can get more value, which then means we have more output. So I need more compute. And so those compute and storage needs can grow very rapidly in those environments. So having an infrastructure where it's not only easy to provision the services to support that as those needs change, but to scale up and scale out that infrastructure as I need to add more compute or more storage horsepower to that environment is critically important.
Let's maybe back up a little bit. So for the people that are in, you know, considering and looking as they go into 2025, efficiency and economics, if they want to understand, you know, what are the utilization metrics, where are the bottlenecks, what are the tools they should be using, what's a practical first step that they should do?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the first step really
needs to call you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Call us and then we will help. Now, your first step is to really put some tools in place that can monitor and analyze the current usage of your environment. And then you compare that with your expected growth needs for any maybe new services applications that we're trying to roll out on top of that. And we combine that data to make sure, A, we're being as operationally efficient in what I have, mixing that with where I need to go in the near term. And I think that's another piece. We always have to be thinking 3 or 5 years out, but we also have to focus on kind of the now. So, you know, what do I need in the next 12 or 18 months to support these new mission critical applications? How do I make sure I'm taking full advantage of the applications I have and I've right-sized what my current environment looks like? That's a combination of kind of tools and analytics and kind of interviews, discussions with the business and application owners who are running that. And we're able to kind of combine those two things together to provide that output of what that might look like moving forward and where you start on that hybrid cloud and hyperconverged journey. And I think that it's a really important consideration when rolling out any new application. And another big benefit to hyperconverged infrastructure is the fact that I can roll it out for a very specific use case or even enterprise wide. But the ability that I now have to rapidly roll out new applications, new services, and the underlying compute, storage, and network that goes into that with hyperconverged is really kind of the secret sauce that delivers that cloud-like experience to my on-prem infrastructure.
A couple of questions I've always gotten from people in the industry and business owners are when they're considering things like this, you know, our infrastructure changes and as you said, getting the tools in place and doing the assessments, paint the picture of what's the difference of them trying to do it themselves versus trying to hire someone like a structured like that, like what's the difference in what they have to go through? Because obviously, I mean, there are a lot of the steps may be the same, but what's the experience? What's the difference between the DIY versus the MSP?
Well, you know, I think about this as I'm planning to build the new pergola in my backyard. You know, I've downloaded about 30 different plans and I've talked to, you know, the big box retailer consultants and I have an idea. But, you know, when I go work with a contractor who's built 100 of these pergolas before, there's probably some economies of scale that could be had there. And I think it's very much the same. I think when you're working with a partner consultant to help you on that journey, right, we've seen these workloads. We've seen your peers in similar vertical markets trying to solve the same challenges. So I think that there's definitely some economies of scale because of that perspective that we can bring to that discussion and often can perform those kind of assessments, analysis, and even comparisons of different solutions much more efficiently and much more quickly for your business. I think because a big piece of this could even be comparing something like what is the cost to run this application, this service in hyperconverged infrastructure versus in a cloud infrastructure as a service workload. Again, we have the tools and the perspective to be able to draw those pros and cons and comparisons pretty quickly for you to make sure you're making the right choice and calling that experience of all the other folks that we've done this for in the past.
I like the pergola example. That's, yeah, it's whether, do you want to, I guess, in a nutshell, do you want to go through the pain yourself or do you want to talk to somebody who's actually already experienced the pain and slammed their finger with a nail or the hammer and hurt themselves?
Right. Let's just say I'm probably going to be outsourcing this pergola construction experience.
let's talk a little bit more about an enterprise business get the knowledge, right? So, I mean, obviously they can talk to you, they can talk to their peers. Is there anything different based on vertical. Like, so whether you're in the financial sector, whether you're in hospitality, manufacturing, like, is there anything that the different verticals should consider, or is it all the same?
No, I think it's a great question. And I think while there's maybe some specific advantages in certain use cases, you know, one that I think of is often we see maybe clients in like the manufacturing and automation sector that are needing to deliver systems at a point in time or a place in a highly distributed environment. Again, I think this is another interesting area where hyperconverged can really help support that edge computing initiative by, again, delivering a large amount of compute, virtualization, storage, network resources in a simple and easy way. Automation and manufacturing environments are getting much more complex. Oftentimes, they need to be relatively offline or air-gapped or segmented within the environment. But, you know, it's not just a workstation or high-end desktop PC that maybe was running those automation and PLC systems from 20, 30 years ago. They need more enterprise-grade infrastructure, not to whole enterprise data center scale, but they need redundancy. They need more storage for collection of the analytics and more applications to run the systems that they control in those manufacturing and automation environments. And so it's been a big push and trend that we've seen over the last few years is this kind of need for higher end edge computing and highly distributed environments. Even if a lot of my organization runs off primarily cloud infrastructure, I have high end applications needs or systems distributed throughout my enterprise that need the redundancy and the controls and the performance that enterprise solutions bring, just scaled down and right-sized to those environments. That's one particular vertical that I think of when I think of where HCI is interesting, and many people haven't thought of it in that way.
I think the question I always have to ask ourselves in these times is AI, right? So how does artificial intelligence really, in all its flavors and forms, not just the Tesla walking robots, but how does it play into future planning? You know, that what's next in the 12 to 24 months? Obviously, the world we live in, we look way ahead in the future from a technology, but how do you think that's going to play into both the people like Nutanix, their product development, as well as just management and servicing customers?
I love this topic because we could spend an hour talking about it. I feel like we didn't talk about anything. But when organizations think about AI, I think there's, you know, you have to really start to break down the different aspects of AI that are going to affect their business. Are they looking to develop and build a large language model that supports their environment? Are they looking to use AI-enabled tools and applications that just improve process and operations and efficiency? Things like security operations certainly is an area where AI can have a big impact, where maybe you're not using your own large language model, but you're leveraging the right solutions that do that. And then there's the area of security and proper use of AI when I think about public and open AI systems like the ChatGPTs of the world and the DALLEs, et cetera. So first we have to kind of break it down into those three different conversations. There's kind of the public large language learning models that we can leverage for day-to-day tasks that we've all been doing for many of us for a couple of years now, just as far as, you know, writing and content creation. There's how are the vendors' tools and solutions that I'm purchasing, integrating, or using AI as a part of their solution set? And then there's the kind of final one of, am I building, developing, or trying to own my own LLM for my own process efficiencies and improvements? When I keep going back to kind of data analytics and business insights and those kinds of things, a lot of this conversation is driving back towards that. And again, that's something that consumes a tremendous amount of kind of compute and storage to run. But in order to make these decisions for my business, I have to have that data centrally stored, aggregated, logged in a central place that I can get access to do my reporting, to do my analysis, et cetera. And that speaks back to almost like these pods of HCI clusters that I envision that are helping process that workload. Because I think most folks are still kind of that investigation and ideation stage of AI and what it can do for my business.
And we could even spin that into talking about containerization and all kind of
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the containerization and HCI markets, you know, again, we're seeing come together. I think many companies are having to rethink how and what they're doing around their virtualization stack in their data center for a large number of reasons. And containerization is one component of that that helps aid in automation and kind of cloud portability, cloud scale efficiency by moving to a containerized, you know, workload format versus some of the traditional virtualization formats that we see out in the market.
Do you think, I mean, you mentioned compute earlier, and I think that's probably an area where I don't know that everybody fully understands how much compute is needed and is going to be needed. Is there anything, you know, I guess, any advice or any just general commentary about, like, hey, as you think about applications and you think about growing, is there any rule of thumb around compute? Like, they should just be knowledgeable about.
I think, you know, what we're generally seeing is compute performance for the most part is heavily outscaling need today. So we generally have maybe more compute than we need in modern high-end data center, you know, grade processors. It seems that memory and graphics and video processing are tending to be the bigger bottlenecks and where you need to scale. And of course, the storage requirements. Am I making my investments within my data center stack in the right place that are preparing me for growth? And so that's where you really have to analyze and understand those workloads that are coming and figure out, are they GPU intensive? Are they CPU intensive? Are they memory? Are they storage intensive? Or what's the mix of those? But you know, when you can get a, you know, dual 48 core box with a, you know, terabyte of RAM or 2 terabytes of RAM or what have you, you've got a lot of CPU and memory generally. It's starting to look at what is my storage performance, the storage requirement, because those two very much go hand in hand. You know, generally though, the faster I want my storage, the smaller capacity and more expensive it's going to be. And so I have to make sure and balance that out as I'm looking to scale that up. Again, that's why you have to look at a solution that has that kind of hybrid cloud scale up, scale out architecture when you're thinking about a solution like hyperconverged.
So good advice, everybody, to just let's not do DIY. Let's try to make sure that we talk to the experts. So, Bill, really good advice. When we think about right sizing, we think about economics and efficiency going into the year. So thank you for sharing, you know, giving the audience some structured insights, more insights of what to do. You can find this podcast and others on the LinkedIn page for Structured. And thanks again, Bill, for the chat today.
Thanks, Nick. Always a pleasure.